We are repeatedly reminded that cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in Canada. Yet why is it that even after a heart attack, many people do not get around to filling that doctor-ordered prescription? A new study published in the journal Circulation from Ontario's Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences says that this decision could lead to a significantly increased risk of dying within 1 year after leaving hospital. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Cynthia Jakovicius, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice and Administration at Western University of Health Sciences in California, and lead author of this study. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the air today, and I wanted to ask you, where did the idea for this study originate?
Well, the idea came from the fact that we know that when patients start medications, that often they don't continue them. But no one had really looked at whether the first prescription that someone gets, say after they've had a heart attack, actually gets filled. So there was a gap in knowledge, and we were very curious to say, after somebody had an acute heart attack, a very serious condition, did people actually fill their medications that may be very important to them in terms of their recovery?
So there really weren't very many studies that looked at this particular issue before.
No, there's very small studies and nothing as large and population-based as we looked at.
Yeah. Now, when we look at the treatment for heart disease post-MI, after heart attack, how effective are the treatments? Before we get to the study, I just want people to get an understanding of, if they were to be treated following standard of practice, how well do people respond after discharge from hospital?
Now, in terms of the main medications that tend to be used long-term after someone's had a heart attack, there tends to be four main medications, one of them being aspirin, another one being another preventative drug called beta blockers. An example would be metoprolol. Another one would be cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins. And then the fourth class of medications would be something called ACE inhibitors, and an example of that is a drug called ramipril.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four main medications that tend to be used to try and prevent having a second heart attack or to prevent people from dying after their heart attack. And these medications tend to be effective in decreasing those bad things from happening about 25% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Often it depends on how high risk the person is and their other risk factors, but that's on average.
Now, how did you design this particular study?
Well, what we did is we had information from a registry of all patients who'd had a heart attack from different hospitals across Ontario, and we had information on whether they had these medications prescribed to them when they were leaving hospital, and we were able to link this up to the prescription claims to see what was filled within 120 days after the people had left the hospital. So we were able to create that link in terms of what was prescribed compared to what was actually filled by patients.
What were your findings?
Well, what we found was actually fairly surprising. We found that 3 out of every 4 patients filled all of their prescriptions, but this meant that 1 out of every 4 patients, or about 25% of patients, did not fill all of their prescriptions after they had a heart attack. So that was the main finding. And then subsequent to that, we also looked at, well, what happened to people if they didn't fill their prescriptions? Did they have a greater chance of dying within a year after their heart attack? So we found that if people didn't fill any of their prescriptions after their heart attack, and this could be cardiac, heart-related, or not heart-related prescriptions, they had an 80% higher chance of dying in the year following their heart attack versus those who filled all of their prescriptions. And then if they filled only some of their prescriptions, they had a 40% increased chance of dying in that first year. So we, again, linked that chance of dying with the likelihood of filling their prescription.
So I guess the questions are some of the reasons for this noncompliance. And I had a discussion with Joe Easingwood, who has a talk radio show in Victoria, British Columbia, recently about this. And we got to talking about a perception of risk and how people look at risk and also the changes that are demanded on their lives after MI, that is all of a sudden being presented with all these medications to take and compliance issues that way. But also, as we tend to see, when people are further removed from the actual time zero when they had the heart attack, the perception that the risk may not be as great anymore because I feel okay, so I may not have to take these medications as much. Is that, does that fall into some of the possible explanations as to why this may have occurred?
Yes, certainly. And often we don't know what motivates any one single person in terms of taking their medications or not. But what you've went over are, I think, some of the common reasons people may not take their medications. They may not realize the importance of the medications. They may not be educated on how important they are and understand why they're taking them. They may also partially be in denial after an event and not wanting to, you know, to confront what's happened to them. Or they may be so overwhelmed with what is happening, it is very hard for them to get into a new mode. Perhaps if they've also never taken medications before and they start five or so new medications, that is a very big change in lifestyle.
So how do,
a lot of reasons.
So how does one approach this problem then? How, with all these particular factors, as you've mentioned, and the significance of cardiovascular disease being so common, and the resulting morbidity or mortality because of the disease, obviously trying to prevent future heart attacks or even preventing heart disease in itself is an important area of practice. So how do, what is required from the study? What would be the next steps that you would want to do to really see various modalities to improve compliance, to improve outcomes?
Well, one thing that we did look at with this study, we were very fortunate to be able to see what was documented in patients' medical charts in terms of education related to their medications. So one thing that we found is that patients who had received medication education before leaving hospital for their heart attack, and this could have been by anybody on the healthcare team, whether it was a nurse, a doctor, a pharmacist, that as long as they had information documented about receiving education about their medications before going home, they were actually more likely to fill their prescriptions, and they were also less likely to die. So we, again, created those links with education and compliance and saving lives. So certainly, even taking a few minutes before someone goes home after having a heart attack and educating them on their medications is seen as a very important factor that we found in our study. And, you know, patients can take away this message to ask about what they're taking and why they're taking it and try and understand that. So certainly become empowered themselves and informed consumers about what they're taking and try and understand that. So I think the message could be for healthcare professionals as well as patients and really make sure there's a good exchange of information there.
Now, given that this was data between 1999 and 2001.
Yes.
Now, the explosion of information, availability of information, internet access, understanding, people looking up medications, side effects, and treatments, I would be curious, and I'm sure this is likely something you're going to be doing, as looking at data today and seeing if there is a difference in compliance rates given this extra information and that hospitals learning and physicians and other healthcare providers learning that education is becoming certainly a more important aspect of care, that over this past 8 years since these people were seen, that perhaps we are doing a little bit better in providing that education and to see if that actually has made a difference.
Yeah, so we will have an opportunity to do a similar type of follow-up study in a more recent time period. And certainly I hope all the availability of information that is out there for patients and for providers would help. But sometimes all that information can be overwhelming to people as well. So it's sometimes hard to know how it will be used and whether people are always getting the most accurate information out there. So certainly going to reliable websites that provide consumer information that's unbiased would be valuable for patients.
Now, for people who are interested in perhaps looking at a synopsis of this study or some of the other work that you're doing, is there a website that they can go to just to look up this information that we talked about today?
Certainly. In terms of the information on our study and other similar studies related to cardiovascular or heart-related research in Canada, we have a collaborative group that is working on a variety of topics similar to this, and they can go to www.ccort.ca, so that's CCORT.ca, and this is some of the work that's done with this research group, and more information would be available on this study as well as other studies.
Well, Dr. Jakovicius, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss very fascinating insight into not only compliance, but also potential for why people behave certain ways and generating a lot of questions that hopefully will be answered over the next few years. And I'm certainly looking forward to the follow-up of this study, looking at data more recently to see if there has been a difference over the past 5 or 6 years.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay. Bye.
Dr. Cynthia Jakovicius is Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice and Administration, Western University of Health Sciences in California. Coming up, some news briefs and some comments. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.